The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from a couple of sources. I'm going to start with a continuation of an article from AARP, the magazine, entitled The Survivors. America has become so accustomed to mass shootings that we've developed a routine. There's the shock, the horror, the memorials, the grief. But for those who survive such horrific attacks, little about life is routine anymore. So today we're going to look at, first, Jennifer Bennett, 68, retired civilian worker for the U.S. Navy, Springfield, Virginia. Date of shooting, September 16, 2013. When the fire alarm went off, Bennett, who was at work at the headquarters of the Naval Sea Systems Command in Washington, D.C., headed down a stairwell to evacuate. Then, just 10 steps below her, she saw a man with a sawed-off shotgun. They locked eyes. Bennett stood still. Next came a blast, and shotgun pellets tore through her shoulder, arm, and hand. Bennett walked back up the stairs, but every door she encountered was locked until she emerged on the roof, where she was picked up by a helicopter that flew her to a hospital. The gunman killed 12 people at the Washington Navy Yard that morning and injured 4 more, including Bennett, before a police officer returned fire and killed him. Jennifer Bennett talks about the aftermath of the Navy Yard shooting in 2 distinct components, the practical and the intangible. The practical is this. It has been more than 11 years since the shooting, and she's nowhere near done with medical treatment. Her arm is attached to her shoulder with a titanium plate and 12 screws. Missing muscle means her spine is subtly but constantly pulling to the left. She schedules regular chiropractor and medical massage treatments so that she's not just completely wrecked with pain, Bennett says. She will eventually need another surgery to replace all her hardware, which is wearing out. Despite 2 bone marrow transplants to regrow the bone that was destroyed where her arm meets her shoulder, there's a small gap that never fills in. That has put extra pressure on the plate and screws, like a paperclip that has been bent too many times. The plate will eventually snap. Already, some of the screws have come loose. Bennett has become adept at painful maneuvers that slot the screws back into place. Still, she's dreading another surgery, which will take her out of commission for up to 2 years. By now, Bennett has recovered enough to do most of the things she used to do, though at a modified pace. She can do her hair, though not really the back of it. She can lug bags of mulch across her garden, but she tires more easily. Bennett says she's not anxious about the medical bills. "I don't worry about anything," she says. "You can't change it. You just have to deal with it." That attitude is informed by her Christian faith. "No matter how difficult something is," she says, "I know there's a purpose." Case in point. Bennett had not spoken to her sister in more than a year before the shooting. But when she woke up in the hospital, her sister was there, making sure Bennett's medical team was giving her the best care possible. Whatever had separated the 2 sisters from each other didn't matter anymore. "I can be a hard, hard person," Bennett admits, "but it's no longer important to me whether I'm right or not. My sister is more important to me." Bennett says she has come to understand her purpose in life, to be what God asked me to be, and that is the light. You either present light so others are uplifted and see their value, or you become darkness. Now let's look at Stephen Williford, 62, active shooter preparedness trainer and gun rights advocate, Sutherland Springs, Texas. Date of shooting, November 5th, 2017. When a masked man opened fire at First Baptist Church on a Sunday morning, Williford was at home, a block away. Upon hearing what was unfolding, he raced to his gun safe for his AR-15 and ran to the church. Williford arrived yelling. and the masked man came out of the building. The two exchanged gunfire. A former competitive shooter and gun instructor, Williford had excellent aim. 6 of his shots hit the attacker, including one between the plates of the man's body armor. But the masked man still made it to his car and drove off. Williford jumped into a truck whose driver had stopped to call 911, and they gave chase for nearly 12 miles before the attacker's car drove through a fence and into a field. After killing 26 people and wounding 20 more, the attacker killed himself, too. Stephen Williford grew up in the dairy farm he still calls home. He's the fourth generation of his family to live on the property, where, as a boy, he carried a gun to chase coyotes away from the livestock and to hunt rabbits and quail. He remembers bouncing on the limb of an old oak tree as his great-grandfather told him stories. Before the shooting, Williford had been a plumber, working a maintenance job at a hospital. After the shooting, he remained a plumber for about 8 months. As his crisis counselor told him, his life changed the moment he decided to confront the shooter. He had to get used to a new normal. "But I loved my old normal," he told the counselor. "What's my new normal supposed to be?" The counselor also prepared Williford for some unexpected physical effects of trauma. "Early on," he recalls, "every time I got really emotional, I lost all control over all my facial muscles on the right side of my face. Had she not told me about this, I would have been panicking." "Once, when meeting with people who had lost loved ones in the shooting," he says, "my right knee started buckling, and the whole right side of my face started into tremors. I told the lady I was talking to, 'I'm really sorry this is happening.' They said it might, because of the adrenaline dump. And she hugged me and said, 'That's what's happening to me, and that explains a lot.'" Over time, those symptoms resolved, and Williford's life has become one he never imagined. As a spokesman for Gun Owners of America, he talks to lawmakers and large crowds about gun rights. He travels the country training churches on how to respond if a gunman ever breaches the sanctuary. At home, he tells his own grandchildren stories as they bounce on the limbs of the old oak tree. They're what motivates Williford's activism now. "I would like to leave my grandchildren the same nation that I grew up in, with the same freedoms and the same environment," he says. "Despite the trauma, I would do it all again," Williford says, "because I believe I saved lives. Along the way, he changed his own. It has enriched my life. I see God more in everything I do now." Now, in AARP, the bulletin under the heading of Your Health, we have an article, "Is it bronchitis or pneumonia? These two diseases can look and feel the same, but they pose different risks. Here's how to know the difference." This is by Rachel Nania. A respiratory infection from colds and flu to COVID and respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, can make you feel miserable, but they can also lead to a secondary issues, including bronchitis and pneumonia. These two infections may share similar symptoms, but in general, they can require different treatments and pose different risks. Bronchitis, miserable but manageable. It may start with a cold or flu-like infection that leaves you feeling run down and achy, says Neil Kelsey, MD, an assistant professor in the University of Nebraska Medical Center Department of Family Medicine. And with untreated bacterial bronchitis, the infection may worsen, particularly in patients with underlying lung disease, and the airways leading to the lungs may get further inflamed and filled with mucus. The result can be a nagging cough, which may be wet or dry, that can persist for weeks. Other symptoms can include sore throat and soreness in the chest from coughing. Since bronchitis is frequently caused by a virus, doctors defer prescribing antibiotics unless a bacterial infection sets in. Instead, helpful hints for feeling better include a cozy blanket, plenty of rest and fluids, especially hot beverages, and that popular home remedy, honey, which may provide temporary relief. Recovery can take time. It may not be a day-by-day improvement, but rather a week-by-week improvement, Kelsey says. Pneumonia, deep and dangerous. While bronchitis affects the larger airways, pneumonia develops in the air sacs of the lungs. It creates inflammation and fluid buildup, and it can be far more dangerous. Pneumonia causes more than 1 million hospitalizations and more than 60,000 deaths each year in the U.S., according to the American Lung Association. Influenza, RSV, COVID-19, and the common cold virus can all lead to pneumonia. But so too can a common type of bacteria, pneumococcus, which can be spread by coughing, sneezing, or touching infected surfaces. Pneumonia can trigger a bad cough as well as other more serious symptoms and can include fever, shaking and chills, shortness of breath, chest pain, loss of appetite, rapid shallow breathing, fatigue, confusion, especially in older adults. Chest x-rays, ultrasound, CT scans, and other techniques may be used to diagnose pneumonia. A second test is sometimes used to confirm the diagnosis. Treatment depends on what's causing the infection. A diagnosis your doctor may make using blood, sputum, or urine tests. If it's bacterial pneumonia, your doctor may prescribe an antibiotic. And in rare cases, when pneumonia is caused by a fungal infection, antifungals can help alleviate the illness. Viral pneumonia, on the other hand, isn't treated with antibiotics. Some prescription medications can help with the symptoms of viral pneumonia. When to see a doctor? A fever that's higher than 101 degrees is a sign you need to see the doctor, says Anthony Schmesma, MD, who specializes in pulmonary diseases and clinical immunology at Hofstra Northwell on Long Island, New York. The same goes if you have a chest tightness or feel short of breath, very fatigued, or dehydrated. Let your doctor know what over-the-counter medications you're taking and ask what changes in your symptoms require a follow-up. Unless you're diagnosed with bacterial pneumonia, it's best not to push for an antibiotic. Overuse of antibiotics can have a number of ill effects, including putting you at risk for C. diff, a dangerous infection that can set in when your gut microbiome is compromised, a potential pitfall of antibiotics, especially for older adults. Bottom line, a seemingly simple infection can turn for the worse quickly. Don't be shy about seeking medical attention. And here's an article on winterizing your lungs, which is a little bit late for this year, but it's good to know. You can do a few things to help reduce your risk of coming down with bronchitis or pneumonia. Vaccinate. The CDC recommends pneumococcal vaccination for adults 50 plus to help reduce your risk. COVID-19, RSV, and flu shots can also help protect you. Wash up, mask up. Don't forget about frequent hand washing and face masks, which can help block the spread of germs, including those that can cause bronchitis and pneumonia. Care for your lungs. If you use an inhaler, make sure your prescription is up to date. When necessary, use a spacer device. If you smoke, make quitting a priority. Purify. Air purifiers with HEPA, high-efficiency particulate air filters in your bedroom and common rooms may be helpful in reducing your exposure to viruses. Now, also in this bulletin issue, under your health, ask Dr. Adam. A top internist and cardiologist answers your questions with surprising doctor-tested tips. Should I be taking a multivitamin? Dr. Adams. The vitamin and supplement industries are enormous. I don't want them to get annoyed with me, but the reality is that if you eat a well-balanced diet with fruits, vegetables, protein, dairy, and whole grains, you don't need to take a multivitamin. This has been proven over and over again. Though there are legitimate diagnoses of people who have multiple vitamin deficiencies, they are rare. Yet 70% of Americans over the age of 65 regularly take one or another daily multivitamin or mineral supplement. People often call me saying, "Adam, I was just watching an infomercial for an amazing supplement. It costs only $60 a month, and it's guaranteed to help me sleep better and feel less stressed out." When I hear this sort of endorsement, I'll usually suggest an alternative and say, "Well, do you think going for a walk outside would make you feel better too? Although you're wasting money, it's likely you will get into any health trouble, unlikely that you'll get into any health trouble by taking these supplements. The joke is that many multivitamins are a mile wide and an inch deep, meaning if you look at the ingredients, a daily dose of a multivitamin typically contains 20 to 45 vitamins, but each one is in a very small amount. Legitimate vitamin and mineral deficiencies come with specific medical signs and symptoms that may include hair loss, splitting nails, bleeding gums, cracks in the side of the mouth, muscle cramps, or weakness. Your doctor can detect a deficiency by taking a careful medical history along with a physical exam, then following up with a blood test. I don't think it's unreasonable at the time of your doctor's visit to ask, "Are there any vitamins I should be taking?" That's a great question to stimulate your doctor to be sure your vitamin D, frequently low in older adults, vitamin B12, and iron levels are checked, or to consider other possible deficiencies. Iron and B12 deficiencies can lead to anemia. Though vitamin B12 and iron are two separate nutrients, they work together to produce healthy red blood cells. Anemia is not unusual among my older patients. Iron is difficult to absorb, and older patients who have decreased the amount of food they eat may have trouble absorbing iron. People who follow certain dietary programs, for example, vegans or vegetarians, could also be at risk for iron deficiency anemia. I've had patients who have given up meat, fish, and chicken become iron deficient. This condition can often be remedied simply by eating iron-rich foods. There are plenty of choices, including dark green vegetables such as spinach and kale, fortified cereals, oats, and lentils, to name a few. It's true you can get too much of a good thing. Some vitamins can be toxic in doses larger than what's recommended. The vitamins A, K, E, and D are fat-soluble, which means they are stored in our liver and fatty tissues. High amounts can cause problems. Vitamin E can interfere with blood clotting, and I've seen people who take too high a dose end up with a bleeding problem. For this reason, doctors instruct most people having surgery not to take supplements 2 to 3 weeks before the operation. The bottom line? In most cases, multivitamins are unnecessary. If you're eating a balanced diet, you'll absorb more than enough nutrients, and you can take the need for a daily multivitamin off your plate. Adam B. Rosenbluth, MD, practices and teaches in New York City. Each Monday online, he answers your questions about how to make your body work better for you. Now let's look at the section under your money, dollars and dementia, an early warning system. Finances can be a sign and a casualty of cognitive decline. This is by Penelope Wang. Unpaid bills, lower credit scores, and shrinking net worth. Years before people are diagnosed with dementia or other cognitive impairment, they often have difficulty managing money and start suffering financially, according to several new studies. The findings indicate that faltering financial health can signal declining brain health, and they point to the importance of protecting your finances or those of your loved ones from the impact of cognitive impairment. We don't want these losses to happen just at the time when people most need all the financial resources to support themselves throughout their illness, says Deborah Whitman, AARP Chief Public Policy Officer. Analyzing credit score and Medicare data, Federal Reserve Bank of New York researchers discovered that in the 5 years before a dementia diagnosis, people were more apt to miss bill payments. By 1 year before diagnosis, average credit card balance and delinquency were more than 50% higher than delinquency balances measured 6 years before diagnosis. Mortgage balances and delinquency were 11% higher. Credit scores declined. The pattern of delinquencies is striking, even years before people become aware of their diagnosis, said Carol Roan Gretzness, a professor of public policy and health at Georgetown University and lead author of the study. Not everyone in the early stages of cognitive impairment mismanages their money, but if a person does, the financial costs can be severe. A study published in the medical journal JAMA last year found that household wealth fell much faster over an 8-year period among those eventually diagnosed with dementia compared with control groups. It can be difficult for people who don't have any knowledge of their own decline to manage money, especially when no one else is there to help, says the study's leader, Jing Li, associate professor of health economics at the University of Washington. In an earlier study, Li and other researchers found that 7.4 million older adults with dementia or cognitive impairment were managing their household finances on their own. Self-awareness can help minimize risk, a Journal of Political Economy study found. Wealthier people in the study who hadn't had a severe memory loss or who simply were aware of their memory issues had smaller drops in net worth than did those who weren't. People are often unaware of their cognitive decline and may be overconfident, which leads them to take financial risks, says study co-author Franco Peritacci, professor of economics emeritus at Tor Vergata University in Rome. To help protect your finances or those of someone close to you, consider these actions. Start now. Ideally, you should create a plan to manage your money well before there's a crisis, says Elizabeth Edgerly, a clinical psychologist and senior director for care and support at the nonprofit Alzheimer's Association. If you're seeking to help a family member, start talking about his or her finances so you can get necessary information. Where are the accounts kept? Which bills need to be paid each month? What are the person's sources of income? It's important to have a family member or friend, along with a backup, to help manage finances in a health crisis. But don't push too hard. Many older adults aren't comfortable with discussing their finances and may not be willing to give up any control. So, you may need to talk about this over weeks or months, says Edgerly. If someone is reluctant to tackle the issue, you might try asking the person to describe the help he or she would want in the event of health problems and how you could provide it. Then simplify. Consolidating accounts at just one or two banks or brokerage firms will make money easier to track and manage. Many older adults I see are holding accounts they no longer remember, such as savings accounts and CDs, says Cynthia McClanahan, a physician and financial planner in Jacksonville, Florida. A list of accounts should be somewhere secure, and other family members should know where it is stashed. Automate. Sign up for automatic bill payments as well as automatic notifications if a transaction exceeds a certain limit. As backup, a trusted helper could monitor the accounts for any unusual transactions. Stifle scammers. Freezing one's credit report at all three major credit bureaus will help prevent fraudulent accounts from being opened. Go to usa.gov/credit-freeze for details. To cut down on telemarketers, sign up for the Do Not Call registry at donotcall.gov. And check with your carrier about options to block calls and texts from unknown numbers. Watch for changes. In early stages of cognitive impairment, older adults can still manage many tasks well, so their financial lapses may not be obvious. but checking in regularly makes it easier to spot warning signs, such as late payment notices or once neat files in disarray. Other red flags might include double paying bills or having difficulty understanding financial documents. Some forms of dementia may cause personality changes that affect financial behavior. You might see a conservative investor plunging into a risky stock or someone giving large amounts of money to unfamiliar charities or people you have never heard of. Shift control gently. If you see signs that a loved one needs help, get ready to step in. But unless there's a crisis, don't rush in to take over everything. One option for preserving someone's autonomy while limiting risk is for that person to retain access to a small bank account to use for discretionary purchases. Another approach is to winnow down credit cards to one or two, reducing the number of accounts needed to be monitored, or to swap them out for a prepaid card. And get help from pros. An estate planning lawyer can review a person's paperwork to see that it's up to date and reflects his or her wishes. This would include a will, medical power of attorney, and a durable financial power of attorney, giving authority to a trusted person if a person is incapacitated. Many financial institutions require their own power of attorney forms, so get those completed as well. People struggling with household finances might also turn to a daily money manager who can take care of bill paying and bookkeeping. To find one, you can try the American Association of Daily Money Managers, AADMM.com. Individuals with its CDMM designation must fulfill an experience requirement, take an exam, and pass a background check. Managers' fees can range from $50 to $150 an hour, depending on the area and the type of service. This article was by Penelope Wang, who is an award-winning personal finance journalist and who has worked at Consumer Reports and Money Magazine. Now, from Outsmart the System, Help Wanted. It seems like stores and restaurants are so short-staffed these days. What should I do? Staffing shortages have been prevalent since the COVID pandemic. As Matt Tucker, head of Talk, an online reservation service, explains, there are a number of economic factors at play, from inflationary pressures to changing worker preferences. Many establishments are struggling to maintain adequate staffing levels. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.